talk a little bit primarily about what we can gain from the Old Testament. And that's in relationship to what we see today, where people are trying to change what we know as history. They're trying to rewrite it. They don't like what happened, and so they think by rewriting it, we can change it. Well, you can't go back and change history. We can change how we look at it. So when I look at the Old Testament, I'm amazed at the precision and the accuracy with which we're gifted what happened. So I'm going to stick as much as I can to the book of Isaiah tonight. Now, the reason I put that up there is because Isaiah was a well-known prophet. And he was a prophet from roughly 740 B.C. to 690 B.C. And so, when we look at what he wrote and the words that he wrote, put this in perspective. Because he starts out in Isaiah chapter 11, starting out in verse 1, and it reads, "Then a shoot will spring from the stem of Jesse. A branch from his roots will bear fruit." Well, obviously, those of us that have read our Bible know that Jesse was the father of King David. That's approximately 1,000 B.C. So, at least we know that Isaiah was a good historian. He accurately talked about. Now, then what he talks about next, well, before we do that, it would be kind of like me talking about George Washington. About the same kind of timeline between now and I know the history books. I know who George Washington was. Let me ask the audience, do you know who his father was? Isaiah is talking about King David's father. Well, I have some cheat sheets and I have the internet and everything else, so I can find that we have a guy by the name of Augustine Washington Sr. That was George Washington's father, just for review. But the point being is that he knew that. He didn't have the internet. He didn't have all the bells and whistles that we have now. And then he leads into verse 2. Now listen to this. "The Spirit of the Lord will rest upon him, the spirit of wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and strength, the spirit of knowledge and fear of the Lord." Now, who's he talking about? He's talking about Jesus. And so I counted, there are seven attributes there of what he assigns to Jesus. The Spirit of the Lord, number one. The Spirit of wisdom, number two. The Spirit of understanding, three. Spirit of counsel, four. The Spirit of strength, the Spirit of knowledge, seven, the Spirit of the Lord. Now, if we don't think that over the whole time, now this is in Isaiah, the old book, but think of Revelation. Revelation 3:1. How does that start out? It starts out with, "To the angel of the church of Sardis, write, he who has seven spirits of God." See the tie? Amazing, isn't it? Now, I have no idea how much in the future Revelation is, but it's out there. I don't know if it's going to be tonight, tomorrow, or 10,000 years from now. But he has just defined some of the things that we know about the Lord. Now, another thing about Isaiah is back in chapter 7, verse 14, we read Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin will bear a child, A virgin will be with child and bear a son, and she will call his name Emmanuel. I want to draw one more line up here. So now, he's talking 700 years in the future. 700 years in the future. And look what he's told us about Jesus. So, now, I don't know about you, but I find that astounding to realize I have a hard time turning on the weather report and finding out what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone what's going to happen 700 years from now, or how it's going to be and who's going to do it and what the names are. Think about just the impact that that's had. We read it in history, and I'll guarantee you, a lot of the secular world would like to tell you that, well, you're just reading what was written much later than what you think it was. Somebody's fooled you. I'm sorry. I don't feel the least bit fooled. I look at some of what they try to claim as being true, and I only find truth in the Bible. I rarely find it any other place. I find all kinds of misinterpretations, miss this, miss that, you name it. They try to twist everything to fit the worldview they have. And more power to them. I mean, you were talking about good and evil. We were given total free choice. And to your point is that we participate in how we look at the world. I don't know how you look at the world, but every day, almost every day is a joy. I don't care if I'm in pain. I don't care if the weather's rotten. It's a great day. And when we look around at what we have here in this congregation and what we have because we are Christians and what God promises, we have hope to look forward to. I experience joy almost every day. I certainly have a peace that I look around and I see a lot of the world doesn't have that peace. But that brings a joy to me each and every day. And I don't care what the weather's doing. I don't care who's mad or who's angry or who's lying or stealing or cheating. Because that's my hope is in the Lord. I apologize. So let's back up a little bit and bring things closer into where Isaiah is. Because he goes in chapter 13 now, and I realize I'm jumping around, but like I say, it's more about realizing what Isaiah reveals to us. And he talks about Babylon. And in verse 13, verse 1, the oracle concerning Babylon, which Isaiah, the son of Amos, saw. I'm skipping a few verses down to 3 now. I have commanded my consecrated ones. I have called my mighty warriors, my proudly exalted ones, to execute my anger. This is God talking. And what's he talking about? When do we have the next thing here? Is we have Daniel. He's captured in 605 BC. Remember when Isaiah was and when he wrote this. Okay? And you're going to find very shortly that he's talking about the destruction of Babylon. It hadn't even come into power yet. Think of it. It hasn't even come into power. And he's talking about its destruction. And he even goes on later on, I'll read to you, where he talks about who does it. But, you know, that really shouldn't surprise us. I mean, he's already named somebody 700 years in the future that's going to be a virgin, and she's going to call her son Emmanuel. Now, if that doesn't blow us away, I don't know what will. Okay. So, we understand that God is going to be angry at Babylon. And he's going to deal with Babylon. In verse 4, at the end of that, the Lord of hosts is mustering an army for battle. They are coming from a far country, from the furthest horizons, the Lord and his instruments of indignation to destroy the whole land. Verse 6, wail, for the day of the Lord is near. It will come as a destruction from the Almighty. Now, we have certainly seen words similar to this at other parts, and when we start talking about a final judgment and things like this, this is certainly a version of what the words that are written for these judgments. And so I don't think we can look at just one final judgment. I think there are periods of judgments that we read in the Bible throughout history. God prefers not to have to deal with his people. I mean, he's pained by this, and later on you're going to see he weeps for Moab. We'll get to that. But the point being is that God is a just God. He is an absolute judge. And so while he pains him personally to do some of the things he's doing, he knows what's best for all of us and what's going to bring us in. So it's not like, well, I like this person, so I'm going to let him get away with it. No. I think I'm going to jump, and this wasn't part of my original talk, but in Ezekiel, we read that, I don't care how, and I'm going to paraphrase, I believe it was in chapter 33, that the day that you change from your sinning to being righteous, you'll live. And conversely, no matter how righteous you've been, the day you turn from that righteousness and you turn to evil ways, you'll die. So I think that we look at God's judgment is ongoing. It is not something 10,000 years in the future only. That we see examples throughout history of where he's had to judge. He brings in armies. First off, he brought Babylon in to deal with Israel, his own people. We see that we had read before about Egypt and how Egypt had dealt with Israel. He brings them out of Egypt, and he saves them, and he sets them up. So, like I say, when you read chapter 13, and I look at things, I'll refer to them as word patterns or word pictures, and we see patterns as well, because when we see it written that, I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. I thought I had this all pegged down to where I knew exactly what to say next, but emotion takes over. The thing I've missed is, okay, God is going to deal with that Babylon in the future, and he does it in a manner, and he talks about how the stars of heaven shall fall, and we see that in Mark, and we see it in Revelation, and in Revelation 6 and Revelation 12. But let's back up and get me back on track, and I apologize. In Isaiah 13, verse 17, behold, I'm going to stir up the Medes against them, talking about Babylon. So we know from history it was the Medes that took over, and it was the Medes that finally released our captives to go back. The point being is that he is now writing and telling us things that are... I've often wondered, and I realize this is... I didn't finish the thought there, but how is it we have a religion that had this given to them was one of their people that wrote Isaiah. And we have the specific and the precision of the words, and they don't get it, that this was the, that Jesus was our Messiah. I don't truly understand that. But because when I read the book and I see all the precision and how the words are written and the amount of details, there is no way you can't look at it and realize that this had to be done miraculously. There's insights were given. In Isaiah and in Job, we're given insights into conversations that took place in heaven. Well, I'm sorry, there's none of us here that are ever going to see that or know that. It had to be divulged by God the Father. Okay. I'm way over time. So, I'm not going to be like Mason. I'm going to try to get it reined back in a little bit here. Chapter 14, he gives hope back to those of Jacob. He says, when the Lord will have compassion on Jacob, again, choose Israel and settle them in their land, then the strangers will join them and attach themselves to the house of Jacob. What are we trying to do? Who are we trying to associate with, and who are we trying to link ourselves to? The house of Jacob. Please, if you get a chance, read chapters 13, 14, and 15, because he goes on and talks about how, and like I say, some of these things no one would know, because he talks about the leaders of Babylon going down to Sheol. And he's going to meet the leaders that had died before then. And he talks about all the things that were happening. In chapter 14, starting in verse 12, he switches over. And now instead of talking about Jesus, he's talking about Satan. And so he goes on and he talks about how he's fallen from heaven. And so here again, he goes through and he gives out details about his evil doings and the fact that I think that what I draw from this is we don't need to worry about some of the details. There's some of this, when I read Daniel not too long ago, I realized in the scripture it says Daniel didn't understand what was going on. The angel had to explain it to him. So if Daniel, who's living through some of this, doesn't understand it, some of these details that are written, and we look at the destruction of some of these cities that we can't even identify, like in Moab, that was to a different audience. Look at what you can understand, and look at what we do know, and draw from that, because don't worry about the things that you don't know. If you never know where the city of Ar was, or K-I-R, and it talks about being destroyed in one night, you realize that to that audience and to these people that were much closer to Isaiah's time, that prophecy was to take place within 3 years. So, and it was given to Isaiah at 715 B.C. So those kinds of things, and you look at why do they hold to the Old Testament as being so accurate, it's because they have faith in, they saw those things, just like we have faith because we see not only the nature of Jesus, but we see also what his name was and how he was born. It goes on and it talks about the judgment of Assyria, the judgment of Palestine. And so, like I say, I apologize, the judgment of Moab. And you'll find these same things in like Ezekiel chapter 25 and chapter 28. And so you start to look at these patterns. And so even though God is pained by what he feels he must do to bring his people under control, he does it. So my main point is, and I see a danger in our society.